Again, very briefly, when you think about tshuva, you tend to think about sadness and pain and darkness. And today the weather is a good day for tshuva. You walk outside, it's dark, it's overcast. This is tshuva weather. And we keep telling you that it has to be sad, it has to be melancholy. If you really dig down and you think about what life's about and how much of the potential you did use and didn't use, and as you grow older, you'll be able to tap into that melancholy a little bit more. And certainly, Rav Lichtenstein, in his lecture called Tshuva and Joy, concedes that the core of tshuva has to be sadness and has to be not just sadness, Rabbi Soloveitchik, but pointed out a pasuk in Eicha that's actually mourning. Ma yisanein adam chai gevro chataav. Is you're actually in mourning. What are you mourning, Lex? Well, you're mourning the you could have been that you're not going to be anymore. Because we all were born with unlimited Moshe Rabbeinu level capacity. And as we make decisions in life, some of those potentials are lost and buried. Now, you're still at a point in your life where a lot of your potential is still ahead of you. But decisions you make have consequences. And by taking those decisions, you eliminate the possibilities and the horizons that were available beforehand. So effectively, a part of you is dying. And you're mourning for that. And Rav Aaron pointed out to the Rambam writes in Nechos Tshuva, Midarchei HaTshuva, that a Baal Tshuva is someone that's always crying and in a sad state. And of course, there should be an extra dose of sadness in the next couple of days. David HaMelech, I keep telling you, if you want to read a good parak about Tshuva, the two prakim in Tehillim, in which David HaMelech shares the emotional turmoil and the emotional almost hurricane of Tshuva, is Nun Aleph and Lamed Ches, 51 and 38. So I'm reading Nun Aleph now just because it opened up. Let me just read. Tashmi Eini Sason V'Simchad. Teach me how to be happy again, he says. Tagelna Atzamos Tekisa. Make those bones that have been depressed, make them once again alive. What are the psukim here? Hein Be'avon Chololti. I was born into sin. That's a Lamed Ches. He's very dizzy. Just read one or two psukim from Lamed Ches, just because I want you to know these prakim. There's no quiet in my flesh because of your anger. My wounds are festering and they're infected. I feel very low. I'm screaming from the disquiet in my heart. Libi scharchar, my heart is dizzy. Azavani koach, I have no strength left. Or enai, the light of my eyes. Gam heim eniti, they're no longer with me. To capture this, Rav Aaron quoted one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, one of the Chassidi Ashkenaz, the Rokeach, Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda of Worms. This is 13th century. Listen to how he described, he wrote his own vidui. So I'll read just a section in English. I cry with the tears of my heart. Streams of water flow forth from my eyes for the fact that I did not observe your Torah. The pain and crisis of my heart have widened. I've changed my attire to sack. This is, of course, a translation. I admit my sins before you with the sharp travails of my heart. Saras Libi. I bemoan my sins. May my bitter tears extinguish your wrath. Extinguish with the blood of my melted heart the fire I've enraged in you. So let me take away the fire with my tears. And may the pouring out of my soul wash away my transgressions like water. So this is a time to be sad. I don't know if you're at the stage, but if you cry in Rosh Hashanah and you cry in Yom Kippur, don't try to stop the tears. Api Kabbalah, those tears are tears of Tahara. In fact, there's a minute if you feel tears to put the tears on your face. And literally, like the Rokeach, let it wipe away all the sins that have accrued and all the schmutz and all the filth that you carry, the tears of Mitahara you. And even if you're not crying extensively, if you feel that, I always tell people, you know, the goal of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is to get to one genuine tear. It may take 40 days to get to one genuine tear of thinking, of pulling away layers of self-denial, layers of self-deception. But if you get that one serious tear, even if it doesn't come out of your eyes, at least you feel like yourself welling up and something's happening inside. It's trickling down to your heart. You feel that emotion. And of course, unfortunately, and this is Rav Aaron being the social critic, sometimes in our community, we frown upon people who cry. So let me just read Rav Aaron. He says, where do we stand in our community in relation to crying? Our gut instinct is that crying is for the ignorant and the superstitious. We're too sophisticated and intellectual, and therefore we're decorous, means we follow decorum and we're restrained. Ribbono Shel Olam, Rav Aaron screams in his article, amidst all this decorum and restraint, Can't we at least at Ne'ilah shed some genuine tears? So may the image of the righteous Yosef, the crier in Sefer Bereishis, Yosef cries on his father's shoulders, animate us. If not to be totally dissolved in tears, as Yosef was, at least to open somewhat the terrible dam which inhibits our moral response to sin and our religious response to the Almighty. Ravon had all these interesting phrases. The terrible dam. It's almost like there's a dam in your heart that prevents the emotions from coming through. And that dam has been placed there by society, by culture, that teaches us it's not right to cry, and crying is for the superstitious, it's for the babies, and for the learn in life to appreciate crying. Learn to cry if you have to cry. Learn to understand when other people are crying, they're expressing very deep emotions. This terrible dam inhibits our giving vent to our sense of shame and guilt, and inhibits our relating to the past or aspiring to the future. So there's no question that Shiva is dominated by sadness, dominated by melancholy, dominated by sense of loss, of frustration, of even anger. But, as Rav Aaron says, and I'll just read it to you, he says, can it be that Shiva is only sad? Can it be that Shiva is only angry? He says, Chas v'shalom, he says, I'm trying to find, and yet could it be that the world of Shiva is wholly morose and depressing, with nothing to provide encouragement to a noble? Does the sun never pierce the clouds of guilt-induced crisis? Speaking for myself, my intuitive response is, Chas v'shalom, impossible. And then the rest of this lecture, Rav Aaron tried to find the joy in Tshuva. He said that it was very well known that if you ever wanted to ask Rabbi Soloveitchik something, the best time to ask him was Matzah Yom Kippur, because he was in a great mood. Anything you wanted, you would have seen. But the challenge is to find the joy, not just in the conclusion of Tshuva, to know that I'm thrilled that Hashem gave me Kapara, but the process itself. Let's say you knew that your Tshuva would be only partially effective. Would it be any less joyful to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to receive His gift, to have your tefillos answered, to have that conversation? And the challenge of Tshuva is to find now. Rav Lichtenstein wasn't a big student of Rav Kook, but as you know, Rav Kook wrote a very famous Sefer on Tshuva, which is full of lightness and full of radiance and full of joy and full of optimism. It's called Arot HaTshuva, Arot HaTshuva. So it changed the entire coloration of Tshuva. Whereas in the classic Litvish sense, Tshuva is very dark and gothic and night. And in Rav Kook's world of Kabbalah, for all sorts of reasons I'm not going to talk about right now, it's radiant and shiny and happy and optimistic and thrilling. And so Rav Aaron didn't learn Rav Kook that much. He certainly didn't quote Rav Kook that much. He tries to find the joy. And so much of the next couple of weeks is tapping into the pain. And it's an experience you don't often visit. You try to avoid pain and sadness, but now is the time to indulge in it in a healthy dosage. But also to feel the great schus that you have, to know that this is the day of judgment, to have the gift of Tshuva, to have Hashem give you the bris of Yigil Amidos, to have that relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and to think about things that are more eternal than whether you'll get all your requests next year. Obviously, the things that are much more internal than you standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I need, or to say differently, to frame your needs in something more eternal. I need, not because I want me, I want to be selfish, I need because I really want to serve you, and the only way to serve those larger values is for me to have the strength and health and life that I want right now. But I'm no longer asking as a 15-year-old or 16-year-old, please let me live the next year because I want to enjoy life. Please let me live the next year because I want to find you and serve you in ways that I'm starting to uncover. And somehow you can combine the joy and the sadness. Okay? Tomorrow we'll learn some Rashis of the Pesukim of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, have a good day.